Hello, this is Michael Steed, and a very warm welcome to this, the second of my Budget 2012 podcasts for the AAT. It's Thursday, the 22nd of March, and yesterday, on Wednesday, the 21st of March, was the budget of itself, of course. And my podcast, that hopefully went up on the website yesterday evening, was just a highlight. It was a sort of a shooting from the hip, just seeing what was there and sounding a few alarm bells and sort of smoothing a little bit. And today I've had a chance to sort of look at a little bit more detail, and I'm going to be looking at the overall picture here. But as ever, what drives me is to have information that's relevant to AAT members. So I've broken this into a number of sections, and on this, my first section, I'm going to be looking at the general government finances. Okay, what are the essential numbers? What do we need to spend a minute or two on? Well, the first thing is to understand that taxation brings in around about £591 billion. It's one of those unimaginable numbers, really, isn't it? £591 billion. But what it spends, current numbers, £683 billion. So there's a deficit there of £92 billion. And of course, that's the thing that's exercising the Chancellor, because he wants to shrink that deficit as an overall number, but also the one that very often gets trotted out is the deficit as a percentage of GDP. So let's have those numbers again, 591 in, 683 out, so there's a shortfall of 92. If you express that shortfall as a percentage of GDP, in 2010-11, it's around about 9.3% of the UK's GDP, gross domestic product, if you like, what we earn, our salary in very, very crude terms. And what the Chancellor is aiming to do is to shrink that number mightily. Remind yourself, if you would, that that number is just an annual number. The national debt is all of those years' numbers put together. So that's quite a very large number, currently about 76%, I think, of our GDP. And GDP, remember, is around about 1.3, touching £1.4 trillion. So what he's trying to do, and of course this is important for us to appreciate this, because it's such an important driver for the tax that we're going to be talking about very shortly now. So he's aiming to bring it down from 9.3 through 8.3, 5.8, 4.3. So by the time he gets to the life of the current Parliament in 2015, he's hoping that that gap will have shrunk to 2.8% of GDP. Right, let's have just a little look at the £591 billion coming into the government's coffers. What are the big beasties in there? Well, the first is income tax at £155 billion, and of course we're heavily involved in that with our clients. National insurance, £106 is the sort of second runner, very closely followed by VAT at about £102 billion. Then quite a bit of a gap after that. There's excise at 48. That's oils, fags and booze, very crudely. And corporation tax, which always seems alarmingly small, at £45 billion. So when the Chancellor's looking to cut the headline rate of corporation tax, you know, you've got to think of it that corporation tax isn't actually a very big earner for the government. So that's the £591 billion on the way in, and what are we spending on the way out? Well, the big one by a country mile, of course, is welfare at over £200 billion, followed by health at around about £130 billion, and then things like defence sort of pale into insignificance at just under £40 billion. And there's around £21 billion on housing and those sort of things. Public order, safety, police, that is around about £32 billion. The last number there that I will just put in front of you is what it costs to service our debts, debt interest on government gilts, because I will be talking about gilts because that's got quite a lot of resonance in what we're going to be doing today. That costs the country £46 billion per annum. So that's what it costs to service that big, big national debt of ours. So there's the Chancellor trying to deal with that £92 billion deficit. So he's doing lots of squeezing and he's playing with this broadly tax neutral budget. You know, as ever with budgets, there are winners and there are losers. In terms of funding government borrowing, it's quite interesting that for the first time, the Chancellor's considering very, very long-term gilts, potentially up to, get this, perpetual gilts, that is, gilts that are issued by the government that pay what's called a coupon, and, you know, they could be 2% and quite long-dated. But now he's considering gilts which have more than 50 years. Current longest is 50 on offer. He's thinking of going more than 50 and potentially forever. Now, that really is quite interesting. Interestingly, a bit of comment on Newsnight last night, that could be of interest to investors. Now, obviously, I'm not in a position to give investment advice, but if you had a perpetual bond that was offering at least the rate of inflation as a coupon, round about 4.5%, then that would be attractive. But anything less than 4.5%, of course, would be less than the rate of inflation. So, in effect, you're going backwards, and the argument that would then be that you look for a better investment. Okay, well, that's all I'm going to say, I think, about the general government finances. Of course, it reminds me of that wonderful character from David Copperfield, Wilkins Micawber. And when his income is less than his expenditure, results misery, he said. And I think there's a bit of that around as well. But as I said yesterday in my kind of highlights podcast, that I just detect a few green shoots. I hope they're not going to be withered off by a late frost. Right, in this, my second section, where I'm going to be dealing with personal tax issues, allowances, and a little bit on pensions too, I do want to pick up on one or two of the things that I highlighted yesterday. I think I said that whenever a Chancellor uses the word simplification, that generally sends sort of alarm bells ringing in my head and shivers up and down my spine. And when he talked about simplifying age allowances for pensioners, I had that kind of rather gloomy feeling, and I wasn't far wrong. And of course, that's now being billed. Get that one. I love it already. It's the granny tax. And could this be, some papers are asking this morning, George Osborne's kind of Gordon Brown 10p tax moment? Well, we're yet to know about that, but there's been a sort of a roar of disapproval, especially from people like Ros Altman, who's the CEO for the Saga Group, which obviously very interested in the grey vote. And it could be that this is actually a bad choice, because if you remember from the budget, what he said was, oh, by the way, almost a slip away there, we're going to be reforming pensions, and by the way, the pensions allowances are going to be streamlined and simplified. And then he very swiftly moved on. But what it comes to is this, and there's a lot of detail in here. Of course, we'll know a lot more when we get to the finance bill, which is going to be published on the 29th. So that looks like next week, doesn't it? But the effective message on personal allowances for the over 65s, the 65s and over, they're going to be frozen from 2013-14. So effectively, they're going to be withering on the vine. There's going to be some restriction, as I see that, from 2012, but the main hit is going to come, like a lot of the things in this budget, from 2013-14 onwards. So from April 2013, age-related personal allowances will not be increased. That's the key thing. They're going to be frozen. And their availability is going to be restricted to people born on or before the 5th of April 1948 to get your 10,500 allowance, and on or before the 5th of April 1938, so for that, think the 75s, for allowances worth 10,660. But the other thing that I think we need to get a grip of here, that if you're not either 65 or 75 by the 6th of April 2013, then as I read all this, and confirmation will be forthcoming once we've got the finance bill, then you won't get your annual allowance. So people born on or after the 6th of April 1948 will only get the personal allowance of, and remember the headline number is 9,205 for 2013-14 onwards. Now, there's quite a lot of information floating around about that. And of course, in the tax update series, I will be spending a few minutes and I'll do a few examples for you, just so that we're all clear what we need to tell our clients about this loss of age allowance. I mean, there's the usual saber-rattling, isn't there? And I'm not entirely convinced by that because, as we know, a lot of pensioners will be retiring on a state pension. And if they're very lucky, they're going to get a sort of a meagre private pension. And that's going to be very common indeed. So it won't matter whether you get 9,205, which will be the new personal allowance for everybody from 2013-14, or you had the older increased age allowances. So I think for a lot of pensioners, a lot of this is simply saber-rattling and it won't make a lot of difference to them. And of course, the figure of £3 billion is being bandied around. This is a raid, a £3 billion raid on pensioners' income. The reason that we get £3 billion out of that, as far as I can see, is that it's all about the increase, the sort of the inflation increases that we've been used to for age allowances. They'll no longer be there. If you look at the Treasury's actual figures, it's going to bring in around about £1 billion by about 2015. So, you know, whichever way you look at it, it is no doubt a smash and grab raid on pensioners and their income allowances. He's billed it as simplification. I think now, probably this morning, they're wondering if they've miscalculated on that one. Okay, so that's as much as I think I need to say about age allowances. Of course, for the under 65s, let's call it the working generation, they are going to have a steady increase in their personal allowance going up to Nick Clegg's famous £10,000, and those numbers are readily available. But notice too, there's the normal thing. The higher rate threshold has been drawn back. But another number being bandied around is that although from last year and this year, we had just basic rate taxpayers benefiting from the increase in the personal allowance, it seems like that from 2014, that is going to be a little bit more of an even landscape, that higher rate taxpayers will also be able to benefit from some of this increased personal allowance, but only by one quarter. And again, I'll do some examples on the tax update series so that we're clear about what that means for people who are just higher rate taxpayers. Okay, let's move on then. A quick word about national insurance. We've got the normal slight increases in national insurance. One of the interesting numbers, of course, relevant for us and for our clients and members for themselves, the lower earnings limit for Class 1 national insurance has gone up from £102 to £107, and that's going up in April 2012. And of course, that's an important number, isn't it? That when we're talking about salaries, personal allowance salaries and dividend extraction, we've got to make at least the lower earnings limit in order to give us the credits for the state pension. I think one other point about personal tax allowances and rates and so forth is to just acknowledge the number of people who will have been dragged into higher rate tax by 2015-16. And of course, economists refer to this as fiscal drag, and he's deliberately introducing this fiscal drag, that every time he raises the personal allowance, he's knocking back the basic rate limit. And of course, when you add the basic rate limit to the personal allowance, you get the threshold at which taxpayers start to pay higher rate tax. And that's dropping, obviously, as these numbers move through the next two or three tax years. So that means more and more people are going to be pulled into higher rate tax. Actually, the numbers are quite remarkable. I think in this current tax year, the number of higher rate taxpayers is around about 4 million. And that's due to go to over 5 million in 2013. And in 2015, I think that number is going to be just shy of 6 million people. Now, if you just think about that number, then the actual number's just under that. It's about 5.8. But that compares quite strongly with the 3.1 million higher rate taxpayers that the coalition inherited in 2010. So, you know, the number of it, that's quite a stark contrast. That's going to be by the end of this parliament, the number of people paying higher rate tax will be literally, quite literally, double the number at the beginning of the coalition parliament. Okay, so in this next section, I want to have a look at what's going on in the world of pensions. There's a lot of scaremongering, wasn't there, about pension tax relief and whether it would be reduced for higher rate taxpayers. Well, phew, most of that didn't materialise, but George Osborne did have a few things to say about pensions, so I think we need to be clear about that. The first one, and again, it was a headline, but a little bit of detail coming up here, that workers retiring from 2016 are likely to receive a universal state pension of £140 a week. And that's going to replace the basic state and the second state pension with this single flat rate payment. And it's going to be available basically to anyone who's got a 30-year contribution record. Now, if you think about that for a second, there are obviously going to be winners and losers. Those people who are coming up to retirement and have made substantial contributions and where they have a good state second pension could easily be retiring on £150 a week or would have expected to get £150 a week. And they are going to be sadly disillusioned. And I think I fall into that. I think my contributions are such that my state second pension would have topped me up to be over the 140 limit. So I'm going to be one of those losers when I finally retire. Mind you, with the Equitable Life, I probably won't ever retire. So anyway, there you go. That means that that people are going to have to think about pensions. But once you get past the £140 a week, let's get on to the second point that the Chancellor said, and that he confirmed that he's going to have a regular automatic review of the state pension age, and that's going to be increased along with, you know, the increased longevity and good health, the rising life expectancy of people in the UK. So that means that some workers will probably not get a state pension until they are 70. Now, if you recall, the pension age is due to rise to, I think it's 66 by 2020 and 67 by 2028. And of course, if you do that on life expectancy, it wouldn't be unreasonable for that to actually go substantially higher. So we do need to sort of, you know, build that into our thinking. And I think that's probably going to make people think earlier about personal pension provision, alternative pensions like property and so forth. And of course, the next angle, just to confirm that there was nothing in the pension that I could see about pension tax relief being reduced or abolished. So it looks as though contributions to pensions will be available at all rates of tax, be you basic rate, higher rate or additional rate. But of course, the tax cap in there of £50,000 also looks to be untouched. But of course, the good news there is that you've still got the three-year carry forward. So potentially in any one year, if you haven't made contributions, that means you can get tax relief up to £200,000 in all. And I suppose even I, with my jaundiced eye on pensions, has got to accept that a higher rate taxpayer who puts £100,000 into a pot, and let's just say, it's probably a bit optimistic, but let's say a 5% annuity, you've got to put £100,000 into a pot to very roughly match the current state pension of about £102 a week. But if you think of it this way, a higher rate taxpayer's only got to put in 60 cash in order to get that 100 into the pot. And if you've got a 5% annuity for £5,000, 5 in 60, that's about an 8% return on investment. Now, but that's always assuming that you don't take the 25% tax-free. So that's an important point about that. And I think that's going to focus people more on pensions and hopefully from an earlier age. Mind you, worth noting too, and again linked into some of the things that George Osborne was talking about and what the Bank of England have been doing, that annuity rates are at the moment on the slide. And there's been a lot of negative comment from pensioners and pension groups. Again, Saga would be a good one, that the problem has been made worse by the Bank of England's quantitative easing, which I just call in old-fashioned terms printing money. Because what's happening there, of course, is that the Bank of England is basically creating money. And then they buy gilts and bonds from banks. And of course, supply and demand means that the price goes up. And if the price goes up, then the yield goes down because the yield on any gilt is simply the coupon over the price. So that means that annuity rates are going to be slipping and pensions, of course, and this is the last link in the logic chain, are linked to annuity rates paid on gilts. So if the gilt annuity rates are falling, then annuity rates on pensions are also going to be falling because pension houses need to buy gilts to give them the security. I think that's probably as much as I need to say on pensions. So I think at this stage, we're going to move on. Right, what I want to do now then is to talk about child benefit. Because child benefit has obviously been another one of these headline grabbers. And we had a bit of an own goal earlier on, didn't we, where the original proposal was that child benefit would be capped for anyone who was a higher rate threshold. And you only needed one parent in a household who was a higher rate taxpayer for you to lose your child benefit. Well, lots and lots of unhappiness about that. There was the so-called cliff effect edge, wasn't it, or the cliff edge, where if you had somebody who was who was a basic rate taxpayer but very close to the higher rate tax boundary, you could have mum and dad both at 40,000 and they would be clear. They wouldn't have any restriction in their child benefit. But somebody who was another household next door who had one earner who was a higher rate taxpayer, they wouldn't get it. Now, that problem hasn't gone away, incidentally, with these revised proposals yesterday, but at least the numbers have moved up a bit. So you now get a full child benefit up to £50,000, and then it tapers off such that you lose it completely by the time you get to £60,000. That's the new top end. So that's a taper relief. So we're going to be losing £10,000 of salary increase, we're going to be losing 100%. So that's what, £100 for every 1% that you go above £50,000. So for every £100 you go above £50,000, you're going to lose 1% of your child benefit. And again, one of the comments last night on Newsnight was that it's not so much going over a cliff now as rather being thrown down a flight of stairs, which I thought was tolerably amusing. Anyway, so that's as much as I'm going to say on child benefit. Let's have a look at something else. Right, in this fairly brief section, because I had a look at this yesterday, but just to confirm some of the numbers, I want to have a quick look at employee taxation. Of course, a couple of things that immediately come out are in respect of company cars and fuel benefit. They're the ones that quite often get sort of headline-grabbing numbers. Now, the way it works, of course, for company cars is that there's an annual benefit, which is a percentage of the list price, with that percentage dependent upon the CO2 emissions. And from 2012, I think I said in the tax update series last year, there's been some changes. The minimum benefit is 5% for emissions of 75 grams per kilometre or less. So we've got a new number, we're starting at 5. And then for emissions over 75 and up to 99 grams per kilometre, the rate is 10%, and then we start to get the 1% increases for every 5 grams extra. So between 100 and 104, the rate's 11, and so on and so forth. But it is capped at a maximum charge of 35%, 35% of list price. And you remind yourself that last year, the list price, which was capped, is now no longer capped. So if you've got a really expensive car, that does mean as an employer you'll be paying a lot more benefit in kind tax. We still got the diesel supplement of 3% for all bands as far as I can see, but again that's capped at a maximum of £35. For vans, the £3,000 number has not changed. That's a single number that's not linked to CO2, and that, remember, you only get where you have significant private use. And the distinction between significant and insignificant is something that we occasionally talk about when we get together. And I think I've spent a little bit of time on that in previous tax update series. I might just spend 30 seconds on it this year as well. Of course, if you've got electric cars, a little bit of greenwash here, the benefit charge is going to be nil, but only oddly until 2015. There's a bit more change in 2015. And remember, these are a bit like long-dated gilts. The government gives quite long notice periods. It's not for our benefit. It's for the motor trade's benefit so that they can produce sort of more responsive vehicles. Okay, so that's the bit on company cars. Fuel, the key number, of course, is the multiplier, and that's gone from 18,800 to 20,200. And if you've got a van, no change there as far as I can see. Fuel provided for a van that's got significant private use, £550, no change as far as I can see from last year. In this, my next section, I want a quick look at corporate and business taxation. Of course, the headline rate, which I made reference to yesterday, was the corporation tax main rate is going to be down one extra percentage. So it should have been 25. It's actually coming down to 24. Not all companies can have that, but it'll be most companies. There's a whole group of them for ring-fenced companies and ring-fenced profits, which I won't go into here, which don't really concern us. But that's the key number there. But the real key number was not said, and that is the small profits rate is unchanged at 20%. And of course, that's pre-announced. And the other thing that's pre-announced for business taxation was capital allowances changing, of course, from April 2012. And we've dealt with that quite a bit, and I'll probably have 5 minutes in the tax update series, but no more than that, I would think. The thing that did actually strike me was what the Office of Tax Simplification has been doing. And it published in February, and it's on the Treasury website, and you can just go into the Treasury website and hit OTS or Office of Tax Simplification on their search engine, and that will take you down to a subsite, and there's a lot of good stuff there. And I've actually had a quick read through their February report on the future of small businesses and small business taxation, and I have to say it makes quite good reading and a lot of common sense stuff on administration. But the thing that caught my eye was this consultation to introduce a voluntary cash basis, but only for unincorporated businesses. Now, as we'll see in a minute, the VAT registration threshold goes up to 77,000 in April 2012. And what the Chancellor is proposing to do is to introduce this voluntary cash basis, but only for unincorporated businesses where they've got a turnover of less than the VAT registration threshold, although there is a possibility that he may actually raise it up to 150,000. Now, what that means is that it's not just a straightforward cash basis for turnover, but also a simplified expenses system as well. And that'll include things like business use of cars and business use of home, the sort of things that, you know, we often sort of have banter about in our meetings together. So that looks quite good. But of course, that is only unincorporated businesses. And not surprisingly, the Office of Tax Simplification recommended, and the government seems to have accepted that recommendation, that therefore we are going to need to be able to deal with some businesses that want to turn back to being unincorporated where they are incorporated. And therefore, because there are no current reliefs on disincorporation, the government is also going to be consulting this spring on an introduction of a disincorporation relief, something we've often talked about at the Tax Update series. So there's a little bit of wait and see on that, but there's a bit of a wow factor on that one. So I think we'll watch that one quite closely. Okay, I think that's all I need to say. There are obviously other things in there. Oh, yes, just a quick one on business taxation. I guess this is as much as an investment issue, but we will be talking on the Tax Update series about the new Seed Enterprise Investment Scheme, the SEIS, which is like the Enterprise Investment Scheme, but a kind of a slightly more generous version of it, because it allows directors to qualify for eligible investors in these very small high-risk companies. And that's quite good. And I do propose to pick up on that. So look out for that one, the SEIS, the Seed Enterprise Investment System, and a bit more of that on the Tax Update series. Right, let's turn to VAT next. And yesterday, when I had a quick look at this all, it looked pretty straightforward. But then when I got home and started looking through the HMRC website, there were some quite interesting bits on it. The first, of course, is the registration. We mentioned that a couple of times, so I won't talk about that. I love the word they use for that, the revalorization of registration limits. That does make me laugh. But anyway, we've also got, I'm going to use the word again, I can't resist it, revalorization of the fuel scale charges. And of course, we get that. And those are from accounting periods beginning on or after the 1st of May. But then, and this is the most interesting bit of the lot, and quite a bit here actually for AAT members, is what they called in a sort of, you know, kind of sublime treasury language that they use, addressing borderline anomalies. And when I first looked at that, I thought, well, was that something to do with international trade, moving services across boundaries? But actually it's not. It's just that there's a lot of bits in the VAT tax canon that are a bit uneven. And there are three that I think are potentially of interest to AAT members. The first is the decision by HMRC to introduce VAT to alterations of listed buildings. Now, it's something we very occasionally make reference to because you can zero rate. It's one of those kind of valuable construction things. It's not just building new builds, you know, the kind of Taylor Wimpey stuff, but it's also doing permitted alterations to effectively listed dwellings. But it's never covered repairs. And there's always been that sort of tightrope to walk. Are you actually repairing something in a listed dwelling, or are you actually altering it? A repair would be 20%, an alteration would be zero. And that's really what the Chancellor's having a bash at when he talks about addressing borderline anomalies. He's simply saying that these are too close to call, and therefore, rather than bringing repairs back down to zero, which of course is what all the heritage people want, he's actually moved it the other way to get some more money in the coffers. Remember, VAT is a very important contributor to the Exchequer at around about £102 billion per annum, just behind National Insurance, as we said earlier, which is of itself about 106. So that's the first one there. But the other thing is what I'm calling a Greggs moment, because Greggs, the bakery, have mightily complained about this. And this is the issue of hot food, hot takeaway food. Now, if you remember, the way that it works is that if you are, I don't know, a cafe or a takeaway outfit or whatever it is, and you sell takeaway hot food, then the very general rule is that that's standard rated. So if you sell takeaway Indian, takeaway Chinese, takeaway fish and chips, whatever it is, those are going to be VAT standard rated. No question about that. Remember, that's not catering. It's taking away food. Now, what we've also got is a sort of very grey area where food has been cooked and it's on its way to being cold. And classically, this would be pasties, sausage rolls, etc., sold out of Greggs. I like Greggs, actually. I like walking along the street and suddenly you get that lovely sniff. Oh, gosh, I'm hungry. Anyway, they're up in arms about that because the pasties that come out of the oven and are sold actually hot, but they're on their way to being cold because you can just as easily eat them cold. They're the ones that are in this firing line now. And it's going to have effect from, as far as I can see, the 1st of October 2012. So it does two things, these new proposals. The first is to say that these pasties that are on their way to being cold are going to be treated alongside all of the other standard rated hot food stuff. So that means your rotisserie chicken, that means your pasties, that means your sausage rolls in the hot cabinet, they've got to be standard rated. And the only exception to that is actually going to be freshly baked bread. I think you touch bread at your peril, don't you, in political terms, because we must all have our daily bread. So with the exception of freshly baked bread, then all of these kind of grey areas are going to be standardised. And it also is going to have a look at and redefine the notion of premises. Because if you remember, we've often talked about, you know, what happens if you sell something cold like a sandwich and somebody goes outside your cafe in a shopping mall and sits on the pavement there, on the terrace, in tables and chairs that are there for that purpose. Is that part of your premises? Because if you sell something that is a sandwich that's eaten off the premises, that's zero rated. And if you have that same sandwich, sandwich inside the cafe, then that is catering and that's going to be standard rated. So this is just going to have a go at some of these odd areas. Okay, that's the hot food and premises one, and Greggs have promised to take the battle to the government. No doubt they'll be outside number 11 shying pasties at the Chancellor. Okay, the next one, of course, which does affect quite a lot of our clients, is the VAT treatment of chair rental. And we've often talked about supplies in land. So the basic rule, if you will recall, is that anything to do with land is exempt for VAT purposes. So it's exempted from the charge, but associated input tax is not recoverable. That's the basic rule. So how does that work for chair rental then? Well, you've got the owner of the salon who then rents chair space to the self-employed stylist, and you know our members will act for both sides of that transaction. And there's always the issue as to what's the VAT treatment of the chair rent. It can be exempt provided it's genuinely an interest in land, but most open plan salons, as we've discussed in the past, can't use that and they've got to be standard rated. And because it's never really quite clear, then Revenue and Customs, again, from the 1st of October 2012, are saying whatever it is, a chair rent is going to be standard rated. And that's going to be the end of that one. So that at least adds a bit of clarity to it, because I'm always nervous when I see that and people say, oh, yeah, I don't charge VAT on a chair rent. And I'm saying, are you sure that's right? Tell me about the details. And quite often as not, they're actually got the treatment wrong. So there you go, a little bit on chair rental. I think that will have some appeal to our members. Right, well, that's as much as I'm going to say about VAT. I'm going to move on to my next section now. Right, my next section are other indirect taxes, and I'm going to be talking about stamp duty land tax. This featured large in the Chancellor's speech, you know, this morally repugnant idea. That's his phrase, morally repugnant, that people should actually think about putting expensive properties into corporate wrappers, what he amusingly called envelopes, what you and I would just call a company wrapper. So we need to understand what he's done there. But may I remind you that actually the headline that's most important is the stamp duty land tax holiday ends on the 25th of March or the end of the 24th. So the nil rate band, which for a short while went up to 250,000, is now falling back to where it should be at 125. So then 0 to 125 will be 0%. This is percentage of consideration, of course. 125,000 to 250, 1%. 250 to 500, 3%. 500 to 1 million, 4%. This is the one that came in last year. 1 million to 2 million, 5%. And then brand new yesterday, 2 million plus is going to be 7%. Now, we haven't yet spoken about corporate wrappers. That's just buying a house, and that's going to be in one of the bigger cities in the UK, isn't it? Or a nice country pile. That's going to be now the new rate of 7%. But if it's in a corporate wrapper, and as I said in my podcast yesterday, quite a lot of these are offshore companies. They're in places like the Isle of Man. Then if you hold your property in a wrapper where you're taking advantage of a 0.5% stamp duty as opposed to stamp duty land tax, then your SD rate, your stamp duty land tax rate, is going to be 15% of the consideration. So that's going to act as quite a strong disincentive. Okay, so that's the stamp duty land tax headlines. Okay, well, we're getting there now. I just want to pick up a little bit on the duties bit. I mentioned these briefly yesterday. There's a new alcohol strategy in place. The government's obviously very worried about binge drinking and antisocial behaviour. But even so, there are no changes to the duties beyond those already announced. So there's nothing new in the budget on there. So that's okay. But smoking, of course, preventable diseases, lots of anti-smoking sentiment, and that's going to be changing so that the duty on all tobacco products rise by 5% above inflation. remote gambling has become quite big. Lots of tax leakage to the exchequer, people moving offshore to places like Gibraltar, internet stuff all going on all over the place. And as I said yesterday in my podcast, the government is going to be borrowing the place of supply rules for internet services such that these online gambling services are going to be taxed where they are consumed, which means the offshore gambling providers are going to have some kind of presence in the UK, at least enough to be able to deal with the gambling taxes. And there's a bit of negative sentiment about the sort of the death of the Seaside Arcade, the Pier Arcade, because of the new machine games duty, which is going to replace gaming duty on machines, amusement machine duty and VAT. And that's set at 20%, although there may be a lower rate of 5% on that. So that's the gambling bit. Fuel, as we said, no further changes to the plans there. There may be a last-minute sort of commutation to, from death to a life sentence in August, but as far as we know, no change to the 3p per litre increase in fuel duty in August. My last session here, then, is also going to include just the last bit of roundup, sort of odd bits and pieces. One thing I did quite like was the loans lifelines for jobless entrepreneurs. I do think that's got a bit of mileage, and because I like mentoring younger folk and getting them on. I think we all like that. The government has sort of planned on helping rising youth unemployment with this startup. They've got this new £10 million enterprise loan scheme, but it's going to be for under 25s. So I think that is something that's going to be of interest because, you know, we'll always get people, young people with loads of energy that are just sort of bursting to set up in business. And, you know, I'm a great fan of that too. Right, well, I think that's it. That's my appreciation of the 2012 budget, the headlines yesterday, and more detail today. More detail, more relevant detail still in the tax update series. But of course, just to emphasise the point that the tax update series is a lot different to just the budget. There's lots and lots of extras, and we've got extra help sheets and podcasts to go with them. So lots of things going on in the tax update series this year. And I very much look forward to seeing you on that. I suppose in signing off and just looking through the papers this morning, I love the new phrases. We've got granny tax. But my favourite to add to the squeezed middle is the new notion of the squashed bottom. I saw that in a couple of papers today. Sounds like two English villages, doesn't it? We walked this morning from squeezed middle to squashed bottom. I love it. Okay, folks, that's it. Very much look forward to seeing you soon. Cheerio.